This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor of World Sweeper and the director of the World Sweeping Association. And after over 30 years in the power sweeping industry, you know, I've learned I have seniority over just about everybody in the industry. However, today, you are all so fortunate as to be talking to a real a pioneer of the power sweeping industry. A guy that has a name that is synonymous with knowledge in the sweeping industry by any of the old timers that have been around, Mike Dyke. And Mike started in 1976. He found himself teaching art at, I believe, the University of Oregon, somewhere in Oregon. And his older brother started making these Mr. Air sweepers. I don't even know if it was called that then. And darned if Mike didn't get involved. And I'll tell you, the rest is history. And I'm going to let Mike talk to you about the history. And Mike, welcome aboard. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. And I want to tell our viewers at the beginning, and I'll tell them at the end also, that Mike and I have agreed that we're going to be doing these periodically. Some will be Zoom. Some will be audio only with him in a sweeper sweeping, because that's what he's doing these days, because that's what he wants to do. And so anyway, Mike Dyke, great. We've talked about this for a long time. Welcome.
Thank you, Ranger. It's a treat to be here. And, you know, it's the easiest thing in the world to tell you about me and my opinions. It's something I know a lot about. So anyhow, you were asking me how I got started in this business. And as you said, I graduated from the University of Oregon, and I was graduating in a degree for education, K through 12, and with an emphasis in art. And I had a roommate at that time that had a janitorial business. And so my brother, Larry Dyke, was working in San Jose, and he also was a school teacher at San Jose High School. And his connection with sweeping was with Leonard Vella, which was San Jose Commercial Sweeping. And at that time, there were not very many sweepers available. Temco was the major sweeper that Leonard was using, Temco 300. And he was always looking for something that could get parking lot sweeping done at a lower rate of fuel cost. Fuel cost was a big deal for him. So he and Larry came up with a design of a sweeper that fit on originally Ford Couriers. And if you've ever driven a Ford Courier, which I'm sure very few people ever have, it does not have a lot of power. And so we put these big round sweepers on the Ford Couriers, and it swept well, and it swept cheap. And from there, people wanted more of them. And that's kind of, and Leonard was a boat racer. And that's how Larry and Leonard got to know each other, because Larry built the race boats for him. Oh. And the race boats were called Mr. Sweeper. And because that's what he did. And so that's how the name Mr. Air Sweeper came about. And from there, finally Larry was able to build enough sweepers where he was able to quit teaching high school and started making sweepers full time. And there shortly after, I came along to helping out one summer and stayed for 35 years.
And in the meantime, became one of the most knowledgeable people about the parking area sweeper business on the planet, let alone the United States. I've had so many people talk to me over the years about what they learned from you. And I'll tell you, none of it was contradictory. You had a real good handle on that. But of course, you know, you're doing it every day, and you had a product line that where a lot of people back then were just getting into the business. It wasn't when you went to a mall manager, it wasn't a who does your sweeping. It was that you were a sweeping company, and here's what a sweeping company is. Here's what we do, and here's how we do it, and here's what it'll cost you. Much more than today, where pretty much everybody has a sweeping company, knows what that means and all.
Well, I came to find out very quickly that sweeping in the United States is different in every zone. And what I used to always call the smile states, starting to where you start there in Washington. And if you made the map of the United States like a smile, it would be from Washington, Oregon, California, New Mexico, Texas, all the way through Florida, then up to on the Gulf Coast and the Atlantic Coast. Those were the areas where Masco Sweepers, we changed our name from Mr. Air Sweeper to Masco Sweepers probably in the early 90s. One of the reasons we changed is because we started selling street sweepers. And so we didn't want to think that we were just only a vacuum sweeper, that we sold all different kinds of sweepers. So in the 90s we started, but that's where we sold most of our sweepers. And I found out, I think the first convention I went to was in, I think it was Philadelphia or no, Kansas City, was the American Public Works Show in Kansas City. I believe it was in 1980 or 81. Mm-hmm. And I was not really equipped to be a businessman. I was long hair and kind of
a beard or
well, I had yes, lots of beard, lots of beard, lots of hair. Everybody had lots of beard and hair.
Yeah, yeah.
I had lived the previous 10 years besides going to college. I'd lived in Latin America, in Paraguay and Mexico and South America. And so this show for me was, I didn't even have a suit. Met a lot of people there. I drove a 1980 Datsun pickup, and we painted it shiny black, and it had a tilt dump, didn't even have a high dump. Really high dumps had just barely got started. Of course, Temco, I think, made the first high dump, or maybe Nighthawk.
No, I think Timco probably.
I think maybe they probably did. Yeah. So we didn't even have a high dump, and I met a lot of people at the show. And one of the people I met, I distinctly remember, was from Pennsylvania, and Camden, New Jersey, I think, is where his office was. You would know his name. His kids run the business now. And of course, I thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I knew I could just sweep anything. From that show, I went on the East Coast with it and did demonstrations. And he was the first place I went to. And we went out at night and we swept. And I had never swept sand before that much. Well, yeah, out there it was. So this was a summertime, but still there was residue from snow and sanding and.
Yeah.
And I filled that hopper so full of sand that that little Datsun could barely move. And I quickly learned that that I didn't know everything about sweeping. And and it was a great experience for me. And it the more that I swept up the East Coast and New York, I gave a demonstration on that trip to Mayor Koch in downtown New York City. At the time, he was trying to promote bicycle riding. And so he set these barriers so that the bicycles could ride on Fifth Avenue. And I remember the public works director or part of the street sweeping operation for the city of New York. And, you know, I was a boy growed up in Oregon. And to be honest with you, I didn't have a lot of experience. And this guy's name was Mastrangulo. And I go, oh, that's scary. And anyhow, so I met Mayor Koch and Public Works Director, and I brought they thought this little sweeper was just going to be the best thing to, it just, the sweeper head just fit perfectly in the area that they had set aside for bicycles. And so I swept, they threw all kinds of crap on the street and I swept it up, and oh, they were ecstatic about it. It was a really, really one of those great demos. So they were going to buy two sweepers. And when I got home, you know, I told my brother and I was so excited about it. And then I got a call from Mr. Mastrangulo. And he said, Mike, I'm sorry to tell you that the taxi cab union has made a big protest that the taxis could not get to the curb of the sidewalk to pick up their rides. And they were going to boycott taxi driving in New York if they didn't pull that up. So he says, I'm sorry, we had to pull all the barriers up for the bicycles. So we're going to have to cancel that order.
Oh, man. That's a great story. And
what's interesting about it is if you've driven in any modern cities these days here in San Jose, downtown, I mean, you can hardly drive. They've got these big green striped bicycle paths with the barriers. And so, I mean, it's still going on. The process is still going on.
And these days, the taxi union is fighting Uber and Lyft, and they probably right. fighting the bicycle people as much.
Well, in those days, you know, you had to buy what they called a medallion that was attached to the hood of a taxi. And if I remember correctly, that medallion cost $50,000 for each taxi. And so the city put lots of restraints and income from them. So there was a powerful organization, obviously. And that was my foray after that show in Kansas City, where I learned that I need to stay in the Smile States and to be successful. And so from there, you know, we developed different sweepers.
Do you remember, and I think it was that Kansas City show, and I won't say the name of the manufacturer, but there was a manufacturer, I believe at that show, that that went out to the Greyhound rack track, maybe I don't think it was a horse track, and they previewed a new sweeper, and they bust us all out in a couple of buses. That was all big news to me. Well, and maybe it was that. It would have to be after that. Come to think of it, because I came.
I don't think you were at that.
Yeah, I was in the 80s. That's right. Yeah, there was one of the shows that
this was 1980. This is right at the beginning.
that I went to in Kansas City, and
major there was another APW show in Kansas City,
and they debuted a brand new sweeper, bust us all out in a couple of buses to the Greyhound track, and with lots of fanfare, brought the sweeper around to pick up everything in front of everybody watching, and it did a terrible job. And so they just kept going and went around to the back, and that we all waited a little bit, and then here came the sweeper back around, and it did a terrible job again. And I don't think that sweeper model even ever got out, brought to market, because somebody had been behind the scenes that came back to all the people watching and said, that wasn't even the same sweeper. They had two sweepers back there, and that was the second one that didn't work. And it was one of those crazy kind of deals. You thought, aren't there adults in the room here someplace that have pre-swept with that machine? I also want to know, when you filled that little Datsun up with unit up with sand, were you able to tilt dump, or did you have to scoop it out?
Shovel
it out. That's I thought that probably would be the case.
That's why I never did it again.
And the operators today do not realize how long people shoveled units out, and there's still some out there today that's what happens. They shovel.
Well, in the 70s, there were a lot of again back in mostly in the California market. Because, I mean, if you take the amount of parking area in Southern California, it almost would equal 30 or 40 states. So it was a big, big, big market. And because we didn't have snow and we didn't have a lot of inclement, it was all trash sweeping. It had nothing to do with rocks, gravel.
Right.
A lot of rain was not an issue. So it was a whole different environment, but it was a huge market, and it was very competitive. There was a sweeper that was built out of Canby, Oregon, and it was called, I wish I could remember. That's what age does for you. Anyhow, it was basically a plywood box that fit in the back of a truck, and the gas engine was at the back of the sweeper, and what we called the through the fan vacuum. So meaning the debris that was picked up from the sweeper head was like a vacuum cleaner. All the debris went through the fan and was shot up into the hopper.
And the fan had a guarantee of 20 minutes or?
No, I think they sold quite a few of them, and darn it, I'll find the name of that. But that was a sweeper, you know, and it was used like and they liked it in Oregon because it could sweep good in the rain. But of course it would fill that plywood hopper up with water, and so it was a problem. And then our good friend, and later he became one of our employees, built the Dynair, Chuck Reeves is a person that really needs a lot of credit for developing kind of a new style of sweeping. Timco has always been the king of sweepers, but Chuck built, he wanted to always build a sweeper that slid in the back of a truck. And the story goes that he built these sweepers, and he went to Bob Schwartz to give a demonstration, and he had it on an old Ford truck, as I understand the story. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Mark probably would have some opinions about it, but I understand that he gave a demonstration to Bob, and the truck broke down. Well, Chuck Reeves was the ultimate salesman. I learned so much from him. And he was not going to let that little problem define his ability to sell the sweeper. So he called a tow truck company up, and they came out with a tow truck, and he hooked the front of the tow truck to the truck. He started the sweeper up, and he completed the demonstration of the sweeper together with the tow truck. I think that's a pretty damn good story to be. If it isn't true, Mark, if you would, please don't correct me, because it's a damn good story. Yes. But anyhow, then it goes on to say that Bob had a connection of some steel barrels that he converted into his round sweeper based on what he learned from that demo.
Agricultural tanks, I think he called them.
You probably know more about that than I do.
Not really, because that was before my time too. But I know they, in their promo for the old, the first Schwartz sweeper, I think they called them an agricultural tank. So yeah, he probably did. It's a farming area, and probably some farmer bought some tanks, and then again, Mark would know that one.
So anyhow, that's supposedly how Bob started building sweepers. So Chuck came back to, he was in Colorado, and I think he was building Coleman sweeper. The company Coleman supported him, and then somehow he sold that to them, and it didn't work out. So he went to Southern California, and he built a smaller version of it that fit in the back of a truck, which he called the DynaAir. And I guess if you wanted to be fair, Larry and Leonard kind of copied it. So they there's a lot of copying in this industry.
There's a lot of copying going on in this industry, yeah.
And so, because it looked, I know it's a copy because it looked just like it. then Leonard wanted more capacity, and so they converted into a round tank and then to a truck mount unit. And we were competitors with Chuck. Chuck actually sold the DynaAir to Tennant. Tennant built a sweeper based on Chuck Reeves's design for several years, and they weren't very successful. It's not a parking lot sweeping sweepers is not an easy thing to sell. People come into it from other companies, and I saw it hundreds of times where people would try, and they found that it was the sweeping contractor is, especially in the trash sweeping contractor, he's a very peculiar animal and not easy to sell to. And I think they found that out because their brush machines were very successful. They had a very good name. And so he did sell that business to Tennant, and then he came to work for us. And he had a store in Anaheim for years, more than 10 years in Anaheim, sold our sweepers for us.
Well, I know sweeping contractors, a lot of times the mistake I've seen through the decades is they don't, when they price, they don't allocate enough money to, fix their sweeper up and buy another sweeper and go out and get your jobs and all those kind of things. And I bet that's the same thing when you're a fledgling manufacturer. You're not pricing enough to where, you have to do the warranty work. And, as you get more, just like with any sweeping contractor, as you get more business, you can't do it all yourself, and it depends on how well you're able to allocate that to other people. And that same thing happens with a manufacturer. I know when Elgin came out with the Air Cub, and everybody was concerned in the Schwartz Industries when the family owned it, and I was basically handling their marketing at that time, and all the salespeople were quite concerned about this new Air Cub. And what Mark Schwartz told him flat out was, he said, "I hope they sell some, because then they're going to have to service them and provide parts, and they're going to have to do that through their dealer network, which they're not used to doing with a little sweeper that doesn't cost much." And And sure enough, that didn't last all that long.
I had that very same experience when we later on in the late 80s, we had a 4-yard unit that was on a 1-ton truck, and I would go to set up dealerships, and I would go to Elgin dealers or Timco dealers or other people, and they were used to a whole different clientele. And when I would leave a sweeper with them and then I would get my customers to come by, they would call me right away and say, "Who the hell is that guy?" And it was like, "Can you come pick this sweeper up? I don't want to sell this anymore." I mean, it happened almost every single time. And was the only people I could get sell my sweepers were contractors who I had formed a relationship with, who understand contract sweepers and would sell it in besides their sweeping business. It was the only people that I found were successful in selling the sweepers.
When you were talking about the 4-yard, was that the broom sweeper that?
No, it was like the 1600. It was just a longer tank, and we were in hopes of getting a little bit bigger market, than just the Smile States.
Didn't you represent? Was it Sweep Rights?
We sold the first Sweep Rights. The first boom for Sweep Right for Less was in the I would say late 80s. There was quite a big housing boom, and his sweepers have always sold well around housing construction.
Mm-hmm.
And we sold I don't know, maybe 50 or 60 of his sweepers. And then early 90s, there was a downturn in the economy. And so he quit building sweepers and then came out with the Husky sometime in the early 90s. And my wife and I drove the first truck up to Les to have him build the sweeper. And that was it was a great show. It was, I think you'll remember this. It was in Atlanta. And all the sweepers went out to the airport.
Oh, and, yes, that was great.
Yeah, and oh, I loved it. It was,
I think that was the best show.
Oh, that was, for me it was. And so we all got out there and we throw stuff out on that runway out there and swept and I featured Les's broom machine. But after that show, we were Larry and Les were never able to set a very good situation with handling their sweepers, and Les went a different route. So mm-hmm. we never sold the Huskies for quite a while after that. So it's been off and on again, as you probably know. There are rumblings that Les is back into it with
that's true,
with that other group. What's the name of the company?
Merit Sweep right now. I hear rumors from that kind of area that they have some innovative stuff that's on the drawing boards and in process too.
So. What? That it sweeps up debris?
I think this one may actually sweep debris.
Wow, that's a
and it could even dump without having to.
Oh,
I'm serious. And I don't know if it's a broom sweeper, which they're known for, an air sweeper, or what. But yeah, Sweeprite, they have really good roots. The Les he's talking about is Les Jalisco.
Alasco.
Yeah. I bet he probably told you that several times. No, Mike. Alasco. Real nice guy.
Who Lasco?
It's a. He's Canadian and.
No, it's Hungarian.
Yeah, he's Hungarian, but they're up in. Yeah, they're in Canada. Yeah. Right. I enjoyed my interview with him the year that they were my yearly award winner. So, Mr. Air Masco actually has been as well. So you sold sweepers and lots of them. And one of the things that we'll talk about in our future get-togethers is we'll pick topics and we'll bat back and forth the way we think that contractors ought to maybe look at handling those topics, if that's fair to say, and just try to provide information that's good value-added things to think about to the sweeping contractors out there. And I think that will be excellent. Right now, though, you at one point, I don't know how long has it been, 3 years or something, you severed your ties with your big brother and said, I'm tired of selling sweepers. I want to go sweep again. You must have, because that's what you're doing out there. I know you're pretty deciding when you want to sweep and where, and you know, you're pretty independent, but you always have been. Talk about your life currently.
Well, believe it or not, time flies when you're growing a big white beard.
That's anyhow, right. It doesn't take the bus. It flies, I'm telling you.
I've been, this May will be 7 years.
Is that right? So,
yeah. Huh. Yeah. The recession, 2008 recession was very hard on Masco sweepers, very hard on many companies.
It was
the whole industry. And, so, I mean, we weathered through it, and I just decided I wanted to go a different direction. David Dyke, Larry's son, wanted more to do with building sweepers, and he had his own program. And so I just felt it was a good time for me to, a couple of opportunities came up and to set out. And to be honest, I wasn't sure what it was going to be like. And yeah, fortunately, it's turned out very good. One thing that I'm aware of, Ranger, is the one thing I don't know a lot about is street sweeping companies with lots of sweepers. It's a different world. You can take a $20,000 sweeper in Southern California and make a fairly good living.
$20,000, I'll take five of those.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about a used, very rickety sweeper, barely sweep. I'm serious. And you can make a fairly good living. Yeah. Whereas in Minnesota, you're going to spend $300,000 on a street sweeper to make a living, even parking lot sweepers. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole different weather situation, problem situation, frankly, I don't know much about that world. It's a whole different, a very high employee-driven world. You know, one of the things we haven't talked about is the advent of subcontract sweeping, and mm-hmm. that really started in Southern California, and there was a guy in Southern California that had Chuck Reeves' DynaAirs, and he had, I would say, this is in early 70s, must have been, I bet he had 25 subcontractors. Mm-hmm. And I think I've showed you the picture of I think that was 1982. All of those sweepers were Leonard subcontractors. So it was a revolutionary approach to not having employees. Whereas in the northern states, it didn't work because very few people could buy a $300,000 street sweeper and be a contract sweeper. It was very hard, and it is hard. And yeah. So mostly the street sweeping, parking lot sweeping business is employee driven, whereas in many southern states it's contractor driven, mm-hmm. where it is here. So it's worked out very well for me as a subcontractor for much of my work, and it's just a very different world.
Well, that's one of the things I think we should talk about as a topic sometime. And I'll tell you viewers, you know, while you're thinking about it, you know, click back on the article and give us ideas about what you'd like to have discussed. But I think that's one of them, you know, the mechanics of subcontracting and kind of an outline of how that sort of thing works. And I think another conversation, since you're so familiar with single engine sweepers as well as double engine sweepers, we ought to talk about that, you know, when a single engine's needed, when a double's needed, and those sort of things. But I look forward to seeing what contractors think we should be out there talking about too.
Well, I think I spent that. Yeah, I agree. That would be one of the things that I enjoyed doing. Occasionally, I would, because I used to sell a lot of Echo blowers. I used to sell 2 pallets of Echo blowers a month.
Wow.
So I got to know the marketing people at Echo pretty well. And at several shows, especially the one in Florida, I hosted a seminar there about blowers and the sweeping business in general. So one of the things I really liked about, and I've not, maybe it's done, but I've not seen it at a conference, is I gave out a sheet of paper to everybody that was there and had them write down who they were and where they're from and what questions they had. And then we watched a little movie while they were filling it out from Echo about blowers. And this was maybe early 90s, and blowers were very controversial. I mean, they are now, but not near as much as they were then.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the guy was trying to present a video giving the alternatives to blowers, how to clean a parking lot besides a blower. And then that was like 15 minutes. And so then I collected the papers and just pretty much read the questions, and I had a little panel of group people. It was, to me, I was fabulous because they asked good questions and we were able to answer them, and there was feedback from the audience. And so we got to, what I liked is we got to know who was there. You know, sometimes you go to one of these meetings and they're all manufacturers. There's not many end users there, or you don't know. And so I always enjoyed knowing who was there. That was a lot of fun. But that I would agree, if people have questions, that's something that you can really get. And now with there are so many sites. I mean, you're probably aware of all the Facebook sites, and you know, I mean, the questions people ask, you know, some are very technical, and some are people don't know one end of a sweeper from the other. So it's all, you know, all very interesting startups. But the main thing that I was going to say is that I spend about 50% of my time in the concept of starting a sweeping business. And people used to say, who's your competition? I said, well, there are other sweepers, but mainly the people I talk to either want to buy a sweeper or don't want to buy a sweeper. It's not that we're going to buy something else. So it's the idea of starting a sweeping business as a business. So much of my time was spent in how to start a sweeping business.
And I'll tell you, that's one of the stories I talk about is the sweeping companies that are started by a guy that maybe was in the Army, drove a truck, and so now he's out of the Army and he needs a job and he's got a house and maybe he can, you know, mortgage his house and buy a sweeper. He thinks, you know, that's great. I can be out there in the middle of the night. Nobody else is there and I can be doing my work and that'll be grand. And they don't realize that during the day they're going to have to sell this service and they're going to have to fix the sweeper and they're going to have to do all these other things, you know, licensing and et cetera.
Well, all of those problems pale to getting the job, the selling. That is all those other things would be 10%. Getting the job is 90%.
And, that's right.
And some people are cut out for that. I said a million times, if you can't accept rejection, do not try to sell sweeping, because you will get lots of rejection.
Yeah, so, I agree with that. The things I was just talking about, you know, we've had with COVID, you know, we have all these complaints and things, and, you know, justifiably, but I find that my friends and I will have our complaints together, and then we'll say, well, there's another first world complaint. You know, we're not walking 4 hours to try to find something we can make a fire with so we can have some warm food. And those things I was talking about are kind of in the same category. It's not like when you have a sweeper payment and you don't have any jobs.
Right, right. I agree.
That's why I wrote initially the introduction to contract sweeping, because Mark Schwartz had several people that bought a sweeper and then they had to repossess them because they couldn't get any business. And he said, could you write something that says, yes, you can, this is a viable business. However, it is not a get rich quick scheme. And I think they got hurt with that ad they did where, you know, can you find the money in this parking lot? And, you know,
I disagree.
The answer, so, at the time, the answer was it's in the pocket of the sweeping.
Yeah, I know, but I'll tell you, I think there's not one thing I was more envious of than, I don't know whose idea, I'm assuming it was Bob's.
Yeah, I think it was Bob's.
That he, so if you're a newspaper reader and you're at an age where you have some white hair, you will remember that one of the biggest things in newspapers was the Sunday supplement. Every newspaper had the Sunday supplement. And it was a separate, like a magazine inside a newspaper. It was nationwide. And he ran an ad, there's a gold mine in your parking lot. And I believe that this coincided with they had bought the sweeping business from what's the originator of Nighthawk, what's his name,
that's threw it at me too. We can put it in the article.
Rogers.
What was his first name? Yeah, of Rogers, right. Yeah, we apologize to him. He deserves
that. Passed on.
Passed on, exactly.
Anyhow, I think that they had just recently bought the rights, and they had a, so what they did, they had a PTO system. It wasn't a hydraulic. It was a PTO system off of the drive line. And if I'm not wrong, I think I'm right about this, they sold that sweeper for $10,000, truck and sweeper. And they sold a raft of sweepers.
Yeah.
And I was very jealous of it. And that gold mine in the parking lot was the best marketing technique in the history of parking lot sweeping.
Yeah, that was a good one. Before my time, the best one that I came up with was, your sweeper probably will never have to pick up a brick, but if you needed to.
Oh yeah, I know I had many conversations with Mark about the brick.
And that's still, I had a conversation the other day with Tom Rokas at Timco, and we reminisced about those days, and he said, yeah, boy, that hit hard. But they had to go through so many leads to sell. And then a number of people that should not have been in the business, of course, bought their sweepers. And
I always told people that I work with or around 100 leads to one sale.
There you go. Yeah.
100 lead. I'm talking people you actually talked to and did work with, not just a send literature to. I'm talking about people that you had to talk to 100 to one.
So then what is the ratio, because this was Mark's problem at the time. We're talking about Mark Schwartz back when he was running, growing up in that industry with his dad, Bob Schwartz, at that started the company. What's the ratio?
I visited Mark and Bob in 1979 before I started to work for Larry. I was in Guatemala and I was on my way home to Larry. And I said, Larry, I'm going to stop in Alabama and say hi to these guys, see who they are. He says, go ahead. And I went there and I met, they were very nice to me. And Mark had just got back from Hawaii. I believe he's driving a Jaguar. He just got married. He just got home from Hawaii from his honeymoon. And Bob was very nice, let me walk around the shops. He let me do whatever I wanted to. We had a good time together. That was how I started my career.
Yeah, that's a good story too. Yeah, what I was going to say is now that somebody buys a sweeper from you, what's the ratio with the people that can buy a second one and a third one and a fourth one and build, rather than having one never able to really get it going more than that, maybe losing, you know, not able to pay for that sweeper and not having it be a good thing. And that was the whole idea of the introduction to contract sweeping, is to say, you know, look, make sure this is what you want to do and maybe go out and try to sell, stop at some malls and talk to the managers and see what they're doing and see if they're happy. And, you know, then later you can go back to them, and you're doing that before you own a sweeper or have a company. You're able to go back to them and say, hey, remember me? I showed up and talked to you about sweeper contractors, and now I am a contractor. How about, you know, giving me your business? But to do that research before you have your payments is so important.
But I think probably the big difference between Schwartz and Masco was I had hundreds of a single sweeper operators that were, they did fine. They did their job. They worked and they were happy doing that. They never had the concept of having six or seven sweepers. Mm-hmm. And so I would say the majority of my customers, a three sweeper company was big for me. And I mean, there were some that had, you know, 10, 15 sweepers, but by and large, my customer base was one to three sweepers. They were not, I don't know, maybe it was the way I marketed and cultivated. I'm not sure, you know, but that was, and they were very loyal, very, very, yeah. I had very loyal customers.
Yeah. And your reputation, it was just knockout of the park. If Mike Dyke said it was so, well then, by God. So, you know, that shows what they knew, right? We all knew better, but no, you're tough to sell against, that's for sure. You knew all of your product points, and you're just a very worthy competitor back when I was working with Schwartz, and I was glad I was not an actual sales guy out there butting heads with you, because you won a lot of the times.
Thank you. That's very.
Yeah, no question.
Hey, before we leave here, yeah. One little note that's kind of interesting that you may or may not know about. This first show that I went to in Kansas City with little Dotson. So when we were, one thing Larry and I've always tried to do is make friends with people at the shows, especially people who work for our competitors, and we'd take them out and fly them with a few schnapps. And then, the guy who did all the photography for Tenet was our best friend, and we got to know this old guy from Elgin. We became very good friends. He told us all the inside. And anyhow, one day, the president of Elgin came by my booth and talked to me and Larry and Leonard. And he said, hey, we'd like to have a demonstration of your sweeper. And I said, sure, you know, whatever. I sell sweepers, I give demos. So, because Elgin, Illinois is fairly close by. So after the show was done and everybody went home, I went over to Elgin, and so I came up, and you know, the president of Elgin at that time, I want to say it's Peterson or Preston. Anyhow, he became good friends with Leonard's partner, Frank Dorsa, who he is here in San Jose. They became good friends. And anyhow, so I demonstrated the sweeper. And then all these white coat engineers came out of their office and they were huddled around my sweeper. And I was talking to them, says, what are they doing over there? And so what they were looking at was my dust control pump, the water dust control pump. And I didn't know much about it at that time. I said, why are you looking at that? So later on, I came to find out that all the water dust control systems that Elgin street sweepers were using was a belt-driven water pump.
Oh,
and the problem with it, it would lose its ability to pump water because it would run dry. And so I asked Larry, I says, well, how did you come up with the water pump on there? And he says, come here. And so I went into his motorhome and he says, turn the faucet on. And I turned it on. This is it. You turn it off. You see how that works? He says, look under the sink. And there that water pump was. And he says, all I did is, that's a good idea. He put it on the sweeper. And check it out. Check it out. All the Elgin sweepers thereafter had had those water pumps on it.
Yeah, I think they all do today.
Yeah.
That was the good idea. Well, it's hard to believe we've wasted another perfectly good hour, as the click and clack, the Tappan brothers used to say.
Yeah.
I guess with that, unless you've got something else we should wrap up with, let's leave them hanging and wanting more. I just know they must. And we'll figure a topic to come back and reconvene on or more and do it again.
Well, Ranger, you've done so much for this industry. There's no single person that has promoted this industry as well as you have. You've done amazing things in making the street sweeping, parking lot sweeping business a viable business, and you deserve a lot of credit for that. I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate it, and I sure wish we had more time. You could go on at more length about that. Give us more details. you can fool some of the people all the time. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Well, hey, everybody, this has certainly been fun for me, and if nobody else likes it, well, that's on them. But I just know, especially the people that have been around this industry for a long time, will be wanting more. And so if it's up to you guys, talk to us about what you'd like to hear, and we'll cover it as best we can. And what a treat having the Zoom call with the Mike Dyke, the king of the smile sweeper area of the world. How's that? You sure have done a lot for the industry as well, that's for sure. Okay.
Good luck to everybody. Good luck.
Yeah, that's it.